Your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now, but something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Welcome back, Driven Woman Entrepreneur. Can I just say that one of the things I find most frustrating about having an online business is all the shoulds. I mean, you've got to have this, you've got to have that, you got to do this, you got to be here and there, and especially when it comes to email marketing. Now, I always consider myself a pretty good communicator and a pretty good writer, but that doesn't mean I'm automatically good at writing emails. The kind of emails that turn a stranger to a follower, to a subscriber, and maybe to one day a customer or client. That is a very specialized skill set, and most people really don't feel they're doing it well. In fact, most of the women that have worked with me for the last few years have really dreaded writing emails, and even when they write them regularly, they're really not convinced it's doing any good. And I absolutely identify with that myself. So I reached out to Mira Kotond, who's today's guest. She is a several times over Amazon best-selling author, and her whole jam is helping people be more effective at writing emails that are fun to write and fun to read. When we enjoy something, we keep doing it. That just makes sense, right? Now, even though I've purchased several of her books, it wasn't until this very conversation, the one you're about to listen to, that I really, really understood some very fundamental things about email marketing, to the point where I'm now making some changes in the way I do it with the people on my list. So if I've got your attention, if I've made you curious, then I've done my job. Now let's let Mira do hers. So today's guest on the Driven Woman Entrepreneur podcast is a real treat for me because unbeknownst to her, I have been a follower for a very, very long time, and we finally actually get to meet. Mira Kotond is a three times over Amazon best-selling author. She is also listed on the 100 best sites for solopreneurs. And today we are here to talk about email. And the reason I reached out to Mira specifically is not only because I follow her work and purchase her products, but because there are so many people asking so many questions about email. How often you should email your list, how long your email should be, should you use a lot of white space or not, how many calls to action is okay, should you include emojis, and so on and so on. But these things are all tactics. And when you build your business based on tactics, you are going to run into trouble. It is so much better to use a strategy. So this is the lady who knows quite a bit about email strategy, and she's going to share that with us today. So Mira, welcome, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Daya. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to talk about email, and you know I'm a huge email nerd, so this is a topic that's very, very close to my heart.
And because I've been following you for a while, I know that your work has been a work in progress as well. As a matter of fact, you initially started off talking primarily about blogging and eventually worked towards email marketing. It might be interesting if we spend a couple of minutes talking about how you decided that this was the thing that you really wanted to double down on and really lean into your strengths with.
Sure. So I think, yes, I started talking a lot about blogging, but one thing that has been a mainstay right from the beginning of my journey has been email. So while I started off as a so-called blogger, predominantly that was what I was doing, I have always been a huge fan of email. So I had a very solid nurture sequence, a welcome email series, even before that became a thing. So even before people were advocating for that, I had a nurture sequence. I had like 10 emails in my nurture sequence. I had that from day one. So the moment I started to build a list, I had people going through my nurture sequence. So these were things that I had put in place from day one. And I think email has always been a priority for me since day one. And how I kind of made that shift was I started to kind of see the questions that people were asking out there in in the market, like on Facebook groups and communities, there were a lot of questions that people were asking, and I didn't necessarily see answers to that. So no one really was putting out answers to those questions. Like, okay, everyone was saying, yeah, you need an email list, but no one was talking about what emails you should be sending. What should you be saying? No one was talking about prioritizing the relationship more than the stats, like, you know, the opens and stuff like that. So I really wanted to dive deeper into email. And because I had been testing so much and consistently sending emails, you know, week after week after week, I felt I had a lot to share. And that was pretty much the start of how I kind of shifted into really just focusing on email.
One of the things I just have to ask you, because you are an excellent writer, and I consume a lot of your books and your emails, and I really enjoy the way you express yourself. But I'm sure that there are people in your audience who will tell you, well, Mira, you're such a good writer, so of course your emails are going to be good. But I just don't know how to express myself in the written word. So I just have to ask you, do you believe that anyone who has an online business can learn to write better emails?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. For me, I had to relearn a lot of what I thought was good writing. Because, you know, when you write for your business, when you write for the web, it's a different style of writing that you're used to as you would write college papers, you know, or term papers for school or whatever. It's completely different. So I had to relearn a lot of these things that I felt was true about writing. I had to kind of unlearn and do away a lot of things and really put out there a new style of writing for me. So it was really a path of discovery as well. So there were several times where I felt, even though writing has always been my strength, coming into this, I felt like, why do I sound wordy or why do I sound flat? You know, why am I not able to bring in those kind of highs and lows in my tone? And these are all things that I picked up along the way. So writing for the web, writing emails for your business, it is a skill and it's kind of like a muscle where you have to continuously work on it. So it's the same thing for me. So if someone is looking at hearing this and thinking, you know, yeah, you're a writer, you've always felt that's your strength, I just want to kind of assure them that I had to unlearn a lot of rules I felt I had about writing, or, you know, I believed about writing, and I had to kind of figure out what is right for me and what sat well with me. So it's really about picking up a skill. And I think everyone can learn that.
Yes, I think I would agree. And actually, because I podcast, a lot of people who are in the podcasting space say, well, I can speak very easily and very naturally, but when I sit down to write, it's a totally different thing. And so I think, well, why don't you just record a voice note and then work from that? Because I agree, I was trained as a psychotherapist. I have a lot of education in doing the APA certified style. So if that's how I were to write my emails, I wouldn't even want to open them. They would be so boring. But the way I talk normally with people, it's, as you can hear, my voice goes up and down. I use contractions. I use humor. I never wrote a term paper like that. And I never gave a formal presentation like that. But nobody wants to read that. So if we actually write the way we speak instead of some prescribed way that we have learned in the past, you're absolutely right. It's really more unlearning than learning in many respects, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's so many things you can do right now. You can just transcribe. You could speak. Like you said, you could leave a voice note. And then you could, on Google Notes, I think with just a key, you could kind of, as you speak, it's just going to type out the words for you. These are all things that you can do. And I even kind of share that the easiest thing you can do, if let's say you're more comfortable on video, you could leave a link to your video. I mean, it just gets the ball rolling. You want to get away from the resistance of sending emails. So if you're writing a 300 or 500 word email is just putting you off, then do what comes easy. You know, if it's an audio note or if it's just shooting a quick video, then leave a link to that video. At least you'll be sending emails and building that relationship rather than just sitting down, resisting that 500-word email.
I agree. So what would you say at this point in time, because you've been in this space for quite a while, and you have seen how writing emails and the kind of emails that people read, and because you do something that a lot of solopreneurs don't do, you don't just put it out there and hope for the best. You actually track and measure everything you do. So there's actual data to back it up. And a lot of people just think, well, I hope this is working, but they really don't know. So as things have changed over time, I know there's still a lot of tactics out there, but let's go back to the strategy, the things that whether you consider yourself a speaker or a writer, whether you find it easy to sit down and engage with your list, or whether you absolutely avoid it as long as possible. What are the things that we really do need to think of as strategy and not just tactics? Things that every single one of us really needs to wrap our mind around when it comes to email marketing.
I think to start off, it really begins with the intention behind every single email. There is no point in just putting an email out there. And I know a lot of people do this just because they need to send an email out every Thursday and they don't have anything scheduled for the week. And then they just end up typing something and then sending it out. And somehow, maybe because I've reviewed so many emails, I can spot these emails pretty quickly because they don't make a connection and they don't really go anywhere. So every single email that you send has to be intentional and it has to kind of connect with your business. So you obviously, as a business owner, you have your products, you have your services, you have your offers, you have certain values, things that you believe in, perspectives that you share. And all of these make your dent or kind of like your stake in the ground, whatever your niche might be. So the emails that you put out there have to kind of relate back to these different pillars that I just mentioned, you know, whether it's the messages that you want to share, your perspectives or the beliefs that you have, or even the kind of the myths and the false beliefs that you want to break. These are what make you stand out from the competitors that are out there in your space. So when you talk about these things in your emails, that is what is going to lead to a connection and is going to lead to you standing out in the inbox. So it's not so much about the subject line. I've never been an advocate for the subject line because, you know, more than the subject line, people open emails because of your name. So I've had people reach out and tell me when I shared this, they said, you know, Mira, you're right. I hardly see the subject line when I see your name. I just kind of open the email because I know that it's going to be, there's going to be something there that I can take away. So that's the kind of relationship that you want to build with your email list. And this is, I would say, the basics is really to dig deep and figure out, okay, what is it that I want to share with my audience? So even if you're promoting an offer, if it's a 5-module course that you're promoting, you know, don't just be about the selling. Don't just say, oh, you know, cart opens then, cart closes then. More than that, what does someone need to believe in order to take that action? Because there are certain things that they need to believe way before they kind of say yes to you and to your offer. So what is it that they, you know, kind of need to know ahead of time? What are the resistances that they have? What are the myths that they need to kind of unlearn? These are the things that you want to be sharing in your emails. And this can be a little bit of work on your part as well, because it requires you to really dig deep and figure out, what am I saying that's different from the stuff out there? So I'm not saying it's easy, but again, like I said, it's kind of like muscle. You know, the more you work at it, the easier it gets. So whenever I find myself putting across an email that is really tip one, tip two, tip three, then I'm like, okay, something is wrong. I'm not digging enough. I'm not giving myself enough time to really get at the heart of the message that I want to get out there across with this email. So yes, it takes time, but I think this is the foundation really of standing out in the inbox, which it's going to get harder over time with more and more people coming in, more businesses coming in.
You know what? You're absolutely right. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone else say this, Mira, but they don't open it because you have the clever subject line. They don't have it because they don't open it because you have so many emojis or, you know, you say something provocative. They open it because as they're scrolling down the list of the however many people have sent them an email on that day or that week, they see your name and that has a positive association. But you're right. That's not being clever. That's being intentional. That's actually knowing what you stand for. That's being consistent about being true to that message and giving value in every single email. As you were talking about being intentional with every single email, I was thinking about what is the job of this email? What is the one thing I want this email to do? And the job of your email is not to say, I sent an email on Thursday. It's so funny you said Thursday because that's my day. Like, how does she know my I send my emails on Thursday? But if you send your email every Thursday, the job of your email is not to be the email that you send every Thursday, because that's really kind of pointless. I mean, who wants to just be the recipient of something you're doing because you're supposed to do it? There's no creativity in that. There's no desire in that. There's no fun in that. And that's what you say. It's a lot of work to identify your values, to be intentional, to really think about, you know, what do I really want to say? What do they really want to hear? Yes, that's work, but I think it's a lot more work when you're really just doing it because you're supposed to do it. That's the kind of work that's tedious and boring and feels, ugh, like it's just daunting.
And I agree, but it's just sad that so many people are just, they just get on this bandwagon of, okay, I need to have an editorial calendar, pick a date, send an email. And it becomes, like you said, tedious. And I've had so many people almost in tears because they don't really know. They know they want to, they have to send something out, but they don't really know how to connect the dots back to their business. And I've had someone say that, you know, I just had to stop because I know that I was literally putting rubbish out there. I didn't know how to connect the dots. I didn't know whether the content I was sending was making sense. So yes, if you need to take a breather, take a pause and kind of rethink, okay, what am I sending? Why am I sending that?
So are you saying that not every business owner needs to send an email every week at the same day and time? Can you just say a little bit more about that? Because I think we've made a case for why you don't send boring emails, like hashtag no more boring emails. But we've all heard again and again and again and again, and I'm sure you've probably said it in at least one of your books, we do need to be consistent. So how do we be consistent and yet still infuse purpose and meaning and intention and fun and creativity in it? Can you call upon your brain to do that on a regular basis? I mean, or do you think it's better? Because I know you teach batching, so I can't be clever and fun every week on demand, but I can sit down and be clever and fun and funny maybe once a month and just get them all done then, and then maybe tweak them on a weekly basis as other things have come up and I want to tie it into current events and so forth. But do you recommend people batch them less often, or what's your current thinking on that?
So, you know, when it comes to frequency, there's really no right or wrong answer. There are a few ways to go about doing it. I think first and foremost, put in place a system where anyone who's new, who comes into your so-called brand ecosystem, they go through a dedicated nurture sequence. So once you have that, kind of a part of the puzzle is taken care of. Then you deal with anyone else who has already gone through the nurture sequence. They are on your email list. So how do you kind of keep up with them? How do you keep this relationship building going? And yes, batching works very, very well. And what something that you said, you know, it really struck me is that you can't be funny and creative on demand every single week. And that's true, which is why batching works so well. Now, not just batching, but I kind of couple batching together with a sort of theme or campaign-based email planning. So rather than look at it week to week, I would say, okay, for this month, what exactly is my theme? What campaign am I putting out there? So if let's say you want to be known for a topic, if you know you're very new to business, you don't really have an offer, your focus is maybe authority building, you want to be known for topic X, then I would say the entire maybe 1 to 3 months, really put out content out there just on that topic. And that's what I did. So when I kind of made that shift into email, I just focus on putting content out there on email marketing. So once you do that, people will start to kind of register, oh, okay, she's talking about this and she's been sharing all of this amazing stuff. Their mind makes that link and they start to see you as someone that they can trust and that they can go to when it comes to this topic. So you automatically become their top of mind person when it comes to the topic. But it doesn't happen immediately. It has to, like I said, intentionally, you have to take those steps. So if you decide, all right, this month, my entire theme is going to be on this topic, then batching becomes easier as well. Mm-hmm. So some people find it so difficult to batch because they don't really know what the topic is. you know, they don't really know what the theme is. So let's say you are releasing a new program or a new offer. So again, it's not just about, okay, I'll just show up when cart is going to open. No, you need to think about what does someone need to know and believe in order to take that action that I want them to take. And then work back on, okay, what are the emails that I need to prime this person? You need to bring awareness to why they should even care about your offer. You know, what is different about your framework or your formula, or your secret sauce? These are the things that you want to be sharing in your email. So the entire month of perhaps September, if you're planning to launch at the beginning of October, entire month of September should be about sharing about the topic of your offer that you're intending to launch. And this is something that you can batch. So I typically would find a day in the week and then I would batch write 6 to 8 emails. So it doesn't happen from start to end. I would kind of write out, all right, email one, this is the gist. This is roughly what I'm going to be talking about, emails 2, 3, 4. And then the next day I would sit out and I would flesh it out. So about 1 to 3 days from like idea to kind of getting it up there on my email service provider. So it's not just about batching, but batching with coupled with like a thematic and a campaign planned kind of thing. So when you do it in this way, then yes, you can have an email go out every single week, but you can afford to take breaks in between. So when I'm talking about a break, I'm talking maybe a week or 2 weeks. So because I'm so consistent with my emails, I have a solid nurture sequence. I know new people are taken care of. I know my existing people also get emails from me regularly. Then I do have breaks in between. So let's say in between campaigns, I might just send a very simple sharing about me or a very simple newsletter. And I do take a break. You know, I can afford to have that 1 week off or 2 weeks off. But it really depends on the systems that you've set up in the back end.
One of the things I know that you teach is, I think you call it the inside out approach. And I think the inside out approach is not so much, you know, the tips and tricks and tactics, but really understand that email is simply a tool. The goal is a relationship. The goal is not making a sale. The goal is developing a relationship with someone who gets to know you over time so that when you do have something to offer them, they will know whether it's right for them or not. And I think something that you said that I really, really want to emphasize is what they need to believe. Because I think sometimes we just don't go deep enough. Like we'll say, what is the person? I've heard other teachers say, what do people need to know? You know, it's kind of like you'll see on a sales page, this is for you if, this is not for you if. And I think that's maybe kind of a level of understanding. So do I see myself in that description, kind of like my identity? Like if you say, I help emerging entrepreneurs or I help aspiring entrepreneurs or I help freelancers or I help side hustlers or whatever versus I help established entrepreneurs who are ready to go from one-to-one to group or whatever. That's clear. But what they need to know is very different from what they need to believe. And I would love it if you would take a couple minutes and describe in the way you look at the difference between what do they need to know versus what do they need to believe? Because I think that's a deeper level of understanding. Hey, it's Diane with a quick interruption to the episode because I've got a couple questions I just need to ask you. One, are you where you want to be in your business? Are you making the money you want to make, working the hours you want to work, seeing the clients that you want to see, and getting the income and impact that you went into business to get? And if the answer is no, what's holding you back? Why is there a gap between where you are and where you want to be? Do you know the answer? In my experience working with female solopreneurs, so many of them don't even really know what's standing in their way, and that is so frustrating. So I created a little quiz called What's Holding You Back? There's a link to it in the show notes. If this is you, please take the quiz. And if you do, DM me on Instagram at Coach Diane Wingert and let me know your results. Now, on the other hand, if you already know what's holding you back, if you already know what the obstacles are that are getting in your way from achieving the income and impact that you deserve and desire, then I don't want you to take the quiz. Forget about the quiz. Go directly to the other link in the show notes and book a consult with me. I may be the very coach, and this may be the year that you put all of that behind you and really have the business that you went into business to have. For everybody else, keep on listening. And if you find value in what you hear, don't forget to leave me a rating and review on Apple or wherever you're listening. Here we go, back to the show.
It's funny because at first I said I would never own my own practice, and now I own my own practice. And I would say, I'm never going to take it any more than just treating patients. Now I'm thinking about how can I start my own
institute. You know,
yeah, exactly. Even like training other therapists, having a certification with my name that I am, you know, I haven't thought of the name yet, but I'm certified in this technique or whatever the case may be. And really just helping other therapists help their patients the way I help mine.
Yeah, it definitely is. So for me, every offer that I put out there, for me, it's really about the messages behind that offer. And depending on the audience that you are intending to attract. So every offer has a little bit of a different audience. Some people might be really the beginners. There are others. For other offers, you might be reaching out to an audience who has maybe bought similar offers before, but maybe they're jaded with stuff out there. They haven't received any kind of results. And then they're still looking for solutions. So different offers have different a little bit of a different audience. So it's about identifying who your audience is for that offer. For some people, it could be a very beginner problem, unaware audience. For others, it could be an audience that's solution aware. They know they need a solution, but they're just jaded with solutions out there. So once you kind of identify, okay, who is the, what, this is my offer, this is the audience I'm trying to target, you need to figure out, okay, what do they already kind of know? And this is what you mentioned, right? They know all of these things. But in order for them to buy into your message, then where exactly do their gears need to kind of turn? So for instance, one of the programs that I have out there is the Profitable Email System. And the kind of mind shift or belief shift that is crucial for me to get their buy-in is to understand that you don't just need 7 emails in your sequence. It's not about the number of emails. It's about working back on the steps, working back on their customer journey. So that is the main, like a huge belief shift, which is why I dedicate a lot of content to kind of talking about this particular aspect. So every offer has that. So same thing goes for another program that I have, which is Product in 7, where it's kind of like a templatized version of how you would put up a digital program. But the biggest belief shift is don't put out a signature course, especially if that's your first offer. So this is something that a lot of people believe that, hey, I need to put out a course, but no one thinks about it in a different way. No one thinks that there are solutions out there that is not a 5-module or 8-module program. So this is a huge mindset change and a belief shift that I need to kind of put out there. So if they don't agree or they don't buy into this perspective, then it's very hard to get them on my side, which is why I dedicate a lot of time to figuring out where, what are the things that they need to believe in order for them to be ready to say yes. So it's not very easy. You really need to understand your audience. And this happens over time through multiple conversations, whether it's via email or in person or in groups or, you know, however that might be. But, you know, and for every offer that are out, that's out there, there are certain things that they believe, which could be from the kind of old school that you are trying to correct. So you need to figure out, okay, there's no way someone is going to buy my program if they don't believe in this particular thing. So that's kind of how I work back on it.
Okay, so I'm gonna have you repeat that again. There's no way someone is going to buy this particular, is going to purchase this offer, this program, this course, this masterclass, this signature system, whatever it is, this coaching program, unless they believe X.
Exactly.
I really don't think I have heard anyone else say it so clearly. That just gets right to it because you're like, well, what would they have to believe? And if you haven't laid out the breadcrumbs from wherever they are on the journey to that belief, you're talking around in circles. You actually may be talking them out of maybe talking them out of your offer because they thought they were maybe right for it. But the more you were talking about the wrong things, things that were not leading them along on that customer journey and reinforcing that necessary belief, you may literally have convinced them this isn't for me, or it's not the right time, or I am not the person she's looking for, or what have you. It's like, oh my gosh, my mind is totally blown. That's so good. That's so good. Because, you know, when you think about, you're talking about this, what are the things they need to believe? There are people like me who are overthinkers. They overcomplicate things. Their mind runs in 50 different directions. Well, they might need to believe this and they might need to believe that. And then you're making it much too difficult. What is that one core belief without which there is no sale? And then everything gets so much more streamlined and simple from there. That is a game changer. That right there, that is a game changer. Now, why do you think values are so important? Because I have been speaking a lot on this podcast about values. I recently interviewed Laura Iger. I will be linking to that episode in the show notes. And she just published an entire book called Values First and why women, especially in business for themselves, need to have a business that is based on their values. And if we hope to lead others, it's even more important. Why is it so important for you, Mira?
I think it touches every single thing that I do. The way I sell, the way I show up, the things that I choose to talk about and I choose not to talk about, it really all connects back to values. I mean, whether I take up an affiliate offer or a collaboration or a partnership, it really goes back to that. And I think very simply because people are able to notice, you know, we are dealing with an audience that is far more aware than they were 10 years ago. And everyone is used to buying online or seeing businesses online, seeing people carry themselves online. So they are able to tell when you are not consistent, whether you're aligning with people or people, other businesses whose values you don't align with. They are able to kind of pick up on all of these. And I have had people write into me really just to vent because they see people who they buy from kind of working with other businesses who they would, you know, whose values just don't gel with the person whom they thought they were kind of buying from. So, I mean, it's, I think once you kind of align with your values and it kind of touches every single decision that you make, you feel more at peace in the business that you're building. And it's very easy for you to make decisions as well. So for me, it's really value-centered in anything that I do, you know, whether it's, like I said, working with someone, working with a team or whatever it might be. It's easy for me to kind of base it on values because then it's kind of like a no-brainer kind of decision. And I also feel that the audience that I attract somehow are aligned with, it's kind of like my people. You know, they might be a little bit introverted. There are certain things that they hold close to them, which is very similar to what I hold close to them, close to my heart as well. So these are little things that you can put out there, whether it's the stories that you share or with the way that you carry yourself online or even with the content that you're putting out there. If you keep it value-centered, you will automatically attract an audience who really loves you, who loves your work. And even if they may not buy from you right now, because remember, it's really about the relationship and it's about the long game, they will over time buy from you or want to do business with you. I've had people write in and say that, you know, Mira, you are on my vision board for wanting to work with you one-on-one. You know, I'm saving up for that. So don't think that just because someone says no right now, it's a no forever. It is up to you to kind of keep that relationship going and then nurture and have that communication be a constant.
And, you know, people do business with you in a variety of ways. Because my previous career before becoming a business strategist, mentor, and coach is I was a psychotherapist for many years. And I remember one of the people who came to see me one time and realized, oh, you can bullshit this lady. Like she sees you, who you really are, even if you're trying to put up a facade. And it was so disarming to her. She never came back. She must have referred me 20 clients over the years because She's like, this is a person, if you are ready to do the work and you are ready to get the results, you cannot pull any wool over her eyes, because she will confront you in a loving and respectful way. But are you here for change, or are you here to just vent? Because you have friends, bartenders, massage therapists for that. You don't need to pay me for that. You know, I'm here to help people make changes that actually want to make them. So it's really interesting. And you're right. Not everybody who is a fan, a follower, a subscriber is ever going to become a client, but they may tell other people about you. They may regularly share your stuff. They may sing your praises. So there are a lot of ways that people can actually help promote your business, even if they don't put shekels in your pocket, so to speak. There was a couple of things I wanted to make sure that I didn't forget to ask you, Mira, before we are going to wrap up in a few minutes. One of the things I know that you have talked a lot about is the difference between an email broadcast and an email newsletter. And I see so many people get this wrong literally on every platform. The biggest one right now is LinkedIn. All of a sudden, LinkedIn is having a moment again after being kind of like the redheaded stepchild of, you know, the social media platforms. Now, all of a sudden, everybody is talking about LinkedIn and everyone's talking about you got to have a newsletter. And I don't think most people know the freaking difference. So would you please clarify that for us?
Oh, yes. So, okay. Newsletter. I'm not a huge fan of newsletters, but let me just kind of put it out there. My definition of a newsletter. So a newsletter is an email with a few different links, a few different calls to action. You very likely are getting a few different newsletters from other people in the space. So, you know, it typically has like a header with a picture, you know, have a short paragraph, introduction. Oh, this is what's been going on. These are interesting links from my business, what I've been selling, my new content, interesting links from other spaces, you know, other parts of the web. So there isn't a single call to action. It's a few different things. And this is typically what email marketing was known to be about. It was known to be all about the newsletter. Everyone's like, send a newsletter. But I feel that a newsletter really does not do your content or business any kind of justice because of the very nature of a newsletter. You know, there is so much confusion, so many different calls to action. So specifically, if you're trying to put across a point of view, you're trying to build authority, you're trying to sell an offer, you're trying to get clients for your new coaching program, if you're going to chuck it together in a newsletter, it is not going to do anything because it's very, very difficult to shift perspectives, to, you know, do all of those, the work that we spoke about, you know, getting your message across, getting your perspective across, trying to break false beliefs. It's very hard to do it in a newsletter because of the confusion that goes on in a newsletter. So I'm not saying that you should never, ever send a newsletter. I still send a newsletter every now and then, but, you know, the placement of a newsletter matters. So I send it in between campaigns when, you know, I'm not necessarily selling anything, I just want to keep it casual, then I may send one or two newsletters in between campaigns. Okay, but if you are in the midst or in the throes of a campaign where you're trying to pitch an offer, you're trying to get your point across about something, trying to build authority, then I would keep your emails focused on what I like to call like single focus emails. So one single call to action, one main idea for one email. And that is not something that happens in a newsletter. So it's not that newsletters are bad, but if that's the only thing you're sending, I would suggest rethinking your email strategy.
You know what I just also realized as you were describing this? Because you talk about productivity, I talk about productivity, and we are talking about the email campaign or email over time as building a relationship and moving people towards a specific goal. If you send them a newsletter on a regular basis, you're basically saying, hey, look over here, look over there, look up here, look down there. What about this? What about that? And it's not leading anybody anywhere. It's basically giving them the equivalent of whiplash inside of your email. And they don't know what you want them to do. Whereas if you give them an email with one specific focus, you're sending them one piece of information or one thing for them to consider or one thing for them to read, watch, listen to, and then one action, then it's not effortful for them to figure out what the email was about. They're not task switching within the email because you are the one who keeps shifting their focus. When other people who teach this basically say you want to deliver value, so people hearing it think, well, the more things I include, the more value. Not necessarily if you're requiring them to shift their perspective here, there, and everywhere just to get through a single email. That makes it so much more clear and simple.
I know. I love that. I never thought of it from a productivity angle at all till now. But it's true what you said, you know, you are telling them to look here and there and everywhere else. And I love that. I've always been speaking about this, but I never thought about the productivity angle, but it's so true. And that's exactly what we do. We are just kind of taking their focus in 100 different directions.
Well, because a lot of entrepreneurs have difficulty with focus, with consistency, with sustaining effort over time. A lot of us have ADHD, a lot of us don't, but this focus and consistent effort over time, and also the sequence, it's kind of like, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? I'm opening your emails, I'm reading your emails, but you want me to listen to your podcast? You want me to listen to your guest episode on someone else's podcast? You want me to read this thing that you think is cool? Do you want me to watch this little video? You want me to do all of that? That's a big commitment. Like, who has time for that? But if you make it simpler, they don't have to multitask, which we used to, those of us who like to think of ourselves as productive and actually weren't, because now we understand multitasking, there's no such thing. It's task switching. And every time you switch your focus and your perspective, there's a lag to getting yourself back on track, which this style of email, the newsletter, that's exactly what you're doing. And they're harder to write because you have to think about all the different things that you could be sharing. So it's not productive for the writer. It's not productive for the reader. So it totally makes sense that the only time you really want to do that is when you're in between campaigns, and it's actually okay if they're paying attention to a few different things because you're not trying to lead them to a specific call to action or a specific action. That totally, totally, totally makes sense. Okay, I have one more question for you that I've been dying to ask. You have said, and I know you even say this on your website, that you always felt like you, not that you're a square peg in a round hole, but that you always kind of felt like you had difficulty fitting in. And something I've noticed is so many of my clients and so many of the people in my audience say the same thing. I always felt like a square peg in a round hole. I never really felt like I fit in. I always felt like kind of an outlier. And some people use terms like I felt like a weirdo or misfit and so forth. And I just kind of wonder if that just isn't sort of the subtext for someone who hopefully will one day become an entrepreneur, because only 3% of people in the world who are working are actually entrepreneurs. So I guess just numbers wise, we kind of are outliers, but I wonder what you think the connection is, if any.
So for me, I pretty much came into this by accident, and it was never a part of my plan at all. The way I was raised, the kind of family I was from, very traditional, very, you know, follow the path, you know, get good grades, go to college, get a job. And I never thought otherwise. So for me, I guess the misfit part of it came in a lot later when I started my business, where I was just kind of doing my thing until I kind of had a health scare and I had to take a pause and I couldn't go back to work. And I was just sitting at home wondering, okay, what do I do? And then it was my husband who encouraged me to, you know, hey, you're good at writing. Why don't you explore certain things? And that's really when I started looking at talking about marketing, because I was doing marketing back in my corporate and I was thinking, okay, I've always loved that. How do I talk about it, continue to talk about it, you know, and kind of fuel my passion for that. And I started a blog. So that's how blogging came about. And I've never been the type who would put myself out there, never liked, you know, having my pictures all over the place. I was never like a social media type of person at all. So very introverted. So I did feel a little bit of like an outsider. I felt like I didn't fit in. I felt like people were, which, you know, I'm sure they weren't. And being from a completely different time zone from where most of my audience are, That was something that was like, okay, how would they accept me? You know, having an accent that's different from the majority of my audience, would they accept me? These were all things that were really plaguing my mindset at that point in time. So it took me some time to really come into my own and really embrace and be comfortable with who I was and how I was putting myself out there. And I realized that, you know, as long as you're kind of authentic and we spoke about this, you kind of get fueled by your values and you lead with, you know, with your values, people are going to love you, you know, and they are going to see your work for what it is. So for people who are really feeling that they don't fit in and stuff like that, it's okay to not have a mastermind group. It's okay to not be able to pay for a coach or anything of that sort. As long as you stay true to what you set out to do, be intentional with what it is that you want to do. Why are you in business? What is it? What is your intention? Get clear about all of that, and that will stop you from kind of being led all over the place. And you won't be swayed by the 100 different tactics or the 100 different strategies. Stay true to your values and let your values kind of guide you with what you feel is right and wrong and make decisions from there. So you don't need to have friends in high places for you to kind of build a business. Yeah.
This message is so timely, Mira, because I think so many of us believed, because we're all socially conditioned. You know, you're in the East, I'm in the West, but we've all been socially conditioned, and you've referred to this, to think there's a right way to do things. And the right way, the proven way, the traditional way, the way that our parents are happy about and encourage us to continue it, is you study hard, you get good grades, you go to college, you get a good degree, you go into good company, you work in a good field, you get a secure job with benefits, you stay the course, and you do what I call pick and stick. You know, you pick a good path and you stick with it. But this is not so much a tried and true path anymore. In fact, there are many people who have found out the hard way by choosing that path. They got laid off. They were made redundant. Their company suddenly told them, we're moving in a different direction. I don't really quite understand what that means, but we're moving in a direction and you can't go with us, is basically what it means. So many of us sort of fell into entrepreneurship without ever having an intention to be here. And many of us then chose to follow the big name celebrity entrepreneurs, the big name coaches, the big name consultants, the big name gurus. And now, after 10 years of this, a lot of people are feeling really burned, really, as you use the expression, jaded, really kind of cynical. And we don't really want to be told what to do anymore. We don't really want to be told this is the way, as though it were religion. We want to create a business that makes sense to us, that works for us, that is aligned with what's important to us in our current circumstances, with our current goals and our current lifestyle and our current bandwidth. And we want to do it on our terms. So I think what you're saying today, what we've been talking about, is really a fresh perspective and a welcome perspective for people who are really, frankly, sick and tired of being told this is the way you have to do it. When in reality, only 3% of the people who follow the big name people are ever going to get the result they're promised. And so that means there's a lot of people who really welcome the message that you really can do this your way, and it doesn't have to be nearly as hard as we've been made to believe. And that is something I welcome, I'm sure you welcome, and I'm sure your audience welcomes too, because you're just being who you actually are and not pretending anything else. And there's so many people out there who are actually pretending to be something they're not, that people who are really genuinely authentic and who are not playing authentic are now doing really well. And I think it's high time. It's high time. Thank you so much for being my guest on The Driven Woman Entrepreneur. And I want to know, how would you like people to connect with you?
Yeah, so I am at mirakothan.com. And because we've been talking so much about email, if that is a topic that they want to dive deeper into, you can see how I do it in my nurture sequence and the kind of emails that I take you through. I have a free email course called Email List for Newbies. It's at mira.email/course. That's my short link. And yeah, hopefully it gives you a taste of how you can do email marketing and get you inspired. Whoever's listening, get you inspired on this journey to really build a relationship with the audience.
I'm going to link to that. Also, the masterclass on your website, which I think is excellent. And I'm going to recommend the books of yours that I've read that have been most helpful to me. So all of that will be in the show notes. Mira, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Diane.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.